getting gas out on the highway. I had a free minute, and I wanted to ask you something. I just figured why not leave a message.
That's fine, Jasmine said. Ask away.
Really, I don't want to keep you on Saturday night.
Laura.
Yes?
I've been here 2 months longer than you have, and I make a living telling people about their problems.
Which, by the way, is something I'm not exactly great at turning off outside the office.
Do you really think you're keeping me from anything other than a hot bath and a good book?
Laura thought for a moment.
In that case,
can you meet me for a drink?
There was a long pause on the other end of the line. Then,
I don't think that would be appropriate.
Look, Doc, this isn't about me. I called because I wanted your professional opinion on the story I'm working on.
Another pause.
The missing girl.
Yes. I've received a great deal of new information. Too much, really. And I could use some help sorting the wheat from the chaff. Plus, I'd like your take on the psychological angle of things. If it works for you, maybe we can do an interview on the record.
I'm still not sure it's the right thing to do.
Neither is sitting at home on a Saturday night. Come on, don't make me twist your arm. You're the only person I know who can offer an expert opinion on this. You'd be doing me a favor.
Well, Jasmine said and coughed. I suppose it couldn't hurt. The inside of Hopsky's was the same as the night before, except that half the patrons were wearing bowling shirts. Snatches of conversation here and there make it clear that there had been a tournament and this was the after party. The blue shirts all wore smiles and kept slapping each other on the back. They were drinking hard. The green shirts grimaced at each new cheer and looked fit to start throwing punches. In between edged whispers, they drank even harder. Laura spotted Jasmine Devane secreted away in a back booth, wearing a black cocktail dress and pumps. She waved, got a bourbon rocks from the bar, and slid in across from her.
Thanks for meeting me.
I still don't quite feel right about it.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I can buy your drinks.
I mean, if you're going to take advantage of a patient, you might as well make out in the process.
Jasmine smiled.
Okay, I get it. I'm beating a dead horse. And believe me, I hear where you're coming from, Laura said. I know a thing or two about the dangers of navigating professional ethics.
But hear me out, because I'm not sure this is any kind of violation. I really do want your help on my story.
Jasmine gave her a look that very clearly said, you're oversimplifying and you know it. You're still my patient. I could quit and terminate your therapy for the sake of a news story. Now we really are into the realm of the unprofessional.
So there's no way you can be my doctor and help me on this too?
Jasmine Devane slugged the rest of her vodka tonic.
It's more of a gray area.
I'll take that as you'll hear me out.
Just give me a minute.
Jasmine started to stand. Laura snatched up her glass and headed for the bar before she could protest. Once on the stool, she threw back the rest of her bourbon and ordered another one along with the vodka tonic. The bartender made them both quickly and slid them across the wood without a word. Behind her, she heard the sharp clack of the cue ball breaking in a shout. She turned with the drinks and walked straight into the back of a cue. The man wielding it had been bent over the table, lining up his shots, and he cursed, then spun around.
Hey, are you blind or just stupid?
Laura shrugged and stooped her shoulders, a perfect imitation of a dunce.
Oh, I'm just stupid, I guess,
she said, exaggerating her southern accent.
About as stupid as getting worked up over a simple accident and a barroom pool game.
Hey,
he said, his forehead crinkled. It seemed as if he was trying to think of something else to say. Instead, he took two quick steps forward and leaned in close, breathing on her. His mouth smelled of garlic and grease. Laura took a step back so fast she spilled most of the drinks.
You gonna clean that up?
He asked. He was one of the men in the green bowling shirts. His was open a third of the way down, displaying a rough thatch of hair threaded with a gold chain. The remaining buttons strained against his beer belly, and he had a widow's peak so sharp it looked like he might cut himself. Maybe all that hair had just slid down to his chest.
What the hell are you smiling at?
Nothing, she said.
Sure, sure,
he squinted, looking her up and down.
No need to be a bitch about it, you know. I'm just having a little fun with you.
Fun's over, Laura said and turned on her heel. The bartender had seen everything, and two replacement drinks were already waiting for.
No charge, he said.
She thanked him and took the drinks, then made her way around the far side of the pool table. All the while, she could feel Greenshirt's eyes burning holes in the back of her head.
What was that all about?
Jasmine asked once she was settled. Just some asshole. I know. I shouldn't have engaged with him.
You're not going to shrink me for giving him shit, are you?
Jasmine shot a long glance in the direction of the pool table, then shook her head.
No, he must have deserved it.
He's still giving me the evil eye?
Jasmine gave a small, almost imperceptible nod.
But forget about him. In a few minutes, they'll finish their game and be out of our little corner. Why don't you tell me exactly what you had in mind?
Laura walked her through everything she had learned so far. From the details of Olive Hansen's body to the killings from 1988, to the mountain of files she'd acquired.
They ordered more drinks, and when she looked up, Greenshirt was long gone.
So you want a consultation?
Jasmine said.
Correct. The evidence linking the three dead girls from 1988 to Hansen and Teresa Mitchum is anecdotal at best.
The number of similarities seemed too great to simply be coincidence.
That's my instinct as well. But if I publish a story like that,
well, reporters aren't supposed to speculate.
But psychologists can, Jasmine said.
Bingo.
And reporting the conclusions of a psychologist is a lot different than drawing conclusions on my own.
Jasmine sipped her drink and drummed her fingers on the tabletop.
Let's be clear. If you and I talk, really talk, I may draw some early conclusions.
That's the nature of conversation. It bounces around.
Can we agree we won't print anything I might say while thinking out loud?
I'd want time at the end to prepare a final report for you, and you'd only be able to use what's in the report. If it turns out not to be insightful or glamorous, so be it.
Sounds fair to me, Laura said.
Since we're laying our cards on the table, can I ask you a few questions about your background?
Jasmine shifted uncomfortably on her bench.
This is why I thought meeting outside of therapy would be a bad idea.
Strange as it may seem, the less you know about me personally, the better I can perform as your doctor.
But you already know so much about me, Laura said.
Certainly, that's the way it's supposed to be. It creates a power dynamic, and in the hands of a good therapist, that power can be used to positively influence a patient.
Laura shrugged.
We're talking about professional background here, not your fifth grade crush.
Jasmine threw back her head and laughed louder than she ever had before.
Laura made a mental tally of her trips to the bar. 4, maybe 5?
She's drunk, Laura thought, and smiled at the absurdity of it.
My therapist and I are getting drunk together.
What is that little half-smile about?
Jasmine asked.
I wasn't smiling, Laura said quickly.
No, you were smirking.
I was not smirking.
You'd be a terrible poker player, Laura.
It's her tell. You keep good eye contact. You nod along with the conversation. But inside your head, you're in your own little world. And I can tell, because you get this smirk on your face.
She covered her mouth with her hand suddenly.
That wasn't mean, was it?
Actually, it was pretty solid advice.
Jasmine slouched into the booth a little more.
Okay, professional background. I got my degree from University of Chicago. Did my residency at UC Medical Center on the South Side. I specialized in abnormal psychology.
Laura perked up.
Abnormal psychology, really?
Don't get your hopes up. I see that look on your face, like you just hit a gold mine.
It's not like that. Schizophrenia and psychopathy are a lot more common than you think, especially in a big city like Chicago. We had our hands full day in and day out.
I must have treated.
She sipped her drink and glanced up at the ceiling, putting together an estimate.
Let's say, somewhere in the low thousands.
Laura whistled.
Jasmine waved her off.
It's a mental hospital. Sometimes I'd see 10 a day.
But did I ever, in all those thousands, talk to an actual serial killer?
Laura leaned closer, her hands flat on the tabletop.
Oh, my, look at your face.
Jasmine laughed.
Of course not. Not one in all those years. The media loves serial killers. It's no wonder why. Look at the two of us gossiping about it. It makes for compelling reading. But as a percentage of the population, they barely exist. Laura sat back. But we've got one here in Hillsboro. Nothing in the statistics prevents incidences of bad luck. That's what you think this is, bad luck? The very fine edges of the doctor's speech started to slur. Well, she said, it's not exactly good luck, is it? Laura changed the subject. How long were you in Chicago?
Almost a decade.
And then you just decided to move here. Jasmine paused. Her green eyes, usually so sharp, had started to shimmer under the bar lights.
Not just, she sighed. Everyone has personal problems. You've got Boston and I've got...
Something about the look on Jasmine's face touched Laura's maternal instinct. She reached out and put a hand on her doctor's.
What?
Chicago, Jasmine said finally. Let's just say I have Chicago. And we can leave it at that. I had to get out of there, you know? Using her thumb, she started massaging the back of Laura's hand. And this place seemed as good as any. Of all the places in the world, why choose North Carolina? Most people around here rank therapy somewhere between Eastern medicine and voodoo. I think you just answered your own question. Jasmine pointed at the long line of men and women waiting to get drinks from the bar. A 7,000-person town, and not a single mental health professional until I came along. Do these people look happy to you? Laura glanced over in time to see a man rebuffed turn and say something to his friends, who in turn said something nasty to the group of women. In seconds, they were shouting at each other. No, they do not. Jasmine nodded. Stigma or not, I've got a nice little business running. These people are crying out for help. Not in so many words, but they are. But that's not specific to this town, is it? Jasmine shook her head. No, you're right. People are crying out for help no matter where you go. I'll drink to that, Laura said, and they did, more than once. A half hour later, the two of them were well and truly drunk. Out of the corner of her eye, Laura saw one man break off from the group at the bar. He was wearing a green bowling shirt. Not the pot-bellied, hairy-chested man from before, but his slightly better-looking friend. Built like a beanpole with a gaunt face, he sauntered up to the table and leaned down over them. His breath reeked of gin.
You ladies having a nice night?
Laura and Jasmine just stared at him.
Look, I wanted to apologize about Luke earlier.
That's your friend? Laura said. The one who looks like Ron Jeremy, only uglier? The beanpole laughed.
Hey, that's not too far off. I'm Jay, and he's Luke. Luke just went through a bad breakup, and he's got a lot of anger floating around in here.
He tapped his chest. That's not healthy. Here. Jasmine pulled a card from her purse and slid it across the table. Tell him to come see me sometime. He picked up the card and read it, smirked.
Therapy? You want him to what? Talk about his problems?
It's a great way to work through those negative emotions, Jasmine said.
I don't know. I had a better idea. I was more thinking your friend here,
he pointed at Laura,
could fuck his brains out.
Laura froze. The man leaned closer to Jasmine until his nose was only inches from hers.
And I was thinking in the meantime, me and you and that sweet ass of yours could go in the back.
He leered, letting his eyes roam up and down her body, challenging her to stop him. Jasmine, for her part, didn't seem fazed. She put her chin in her hand and looked up at him, wide-eyed and innocent. Wow, gee, do you suck your mother's dick with that mouth? Laura, in the middle of a sip from her drink, snorted, and a trickle of bourbon came out her nose. It burned, and she started a kind of half-laughing, half-coughing fit. Beanpole jumped back like he'd been stung by a bee.
You can't talk to me like that.
Oh, so you can talk about my ass like you've known it for years, but I can't talk about your mother's dick? He jumped again, and his hands clenched into fists.
If you were my woman, he hissed, I'd show you what happens to girls who mouth off.
If I were your woman, Jasmine said, I'd probably die of shame. Beanpole's face turned the color of a ripe plum. He glanced over his shoulder, then jerked his head. Lara followed his gaze and saw Luke and his cheap gold chain walking around the pool table toward them. Jasmine, she said and nodded toward his incoming friend. Beanpole grabbed Jasmine by the upper arm and yanked her to her feet.
Someone needs to teach you a lesson.
Everything seemed to happen in slow motion. In some recessed part of her brain, Lara noticed that her friend stood just a few inches shorter than the man pulling her. She kicked off her shoes, planted her feet, put both hands on his chest, and gave him a shove. His mouth opened in surprise and he stumbled backward, neither quick nor sober enough to recover from Jasmine's sudden shift in momentum. Luke barreled around the corner of the pool table, and, like magic, a pool cue materialized in Jasmine's hand. His eyes snapped open wide and he lunged at her. Jasmine took one step backward and brought the thick end of the cue across at shoulder height in a perfect baseball swing. The cue slipped over Luke's reaching hands and connected with the side of his jaw. There was a wet cracking sound, and then he was on his knees, face in his hands, moaning. Come on, before the rest of them realize what happened. Jasmine grabbed her by the wrist, pulled her to her feet, and started moving toward the door. Outside, the night air was cooling rapidly. The sweat on her brow and under her arms began evaporating, a pleasant chill running across her skin. They turned left and walked as quickly as they could without breaking into a run. A few seconds of silence passed between them. Suddenly, they were both laughing, leaning on each other for support, barely able to stand from the hilarity of it all. Tears streamed down Laura's face. She thought she had never felt so good. When the fits of laughter had passed, she said, "How the hell did you manage that?" Jasmine shrugged. "I've been playing sports since I was a kid, plus a few self-defense classes. I'm in pretty good shape, Lara. Not that I could say the same for them." God, the look on his face, did you see it? Nope, I was too busy running out of there. "I don't think we can go to Hopski's anymore," Lara said, and steadied herself on a light post. "I don't think I can drive home either. You mind sleeping on a couch?" She shook her head. "Then stay with me," Jasmine said. She led Lara back to her apartment, silent and completely barefoot. Chapter 13. Anyone over the age of 20 who consumes more than 4 bourbons is asking for a hangover. A clock chimed 6 in the morning, and Lara pressed at her temples. It felt like her head was stuck in a vise. "Coffee?" Jasmine called from the hall. She pried her eyes open and saw the doctor fully dressed and looking sharp in a black pencil skirt and a gray top with a scooping neckline. Lara gave a weak thumbs up and closed her eyes again. "How can you be showered and dressed already?"
"Tolerance, my child."
"Tolerance?" Jasmine nodded solemnly.
"When it comes to boozing, practice makes perfect."
Once Lara had poured 2 cups of black coffee down her throat, they walked out together to Jasmine's vehicle. To her surprise, it was a mud-stained black truck, the body rusted through in multiple places.
"Not quite your style, is it?"
Jasmine patted the driver's side mirror.
"Oh, I don't know. I think it suits me. My Volvo died just before I left Chicago. Good thing, too, because it never would have made it all the way down here. I flew down, planning to buy a used car."
Lara got it now.
"But a lot of the used cars around here are actually used trucks."
"Yep. But it's been great. Makes me feel like I fit in." They drove down onto Cherton past Hopski's, now cold and dead in the light of morning, and around the corner to the Dart. Together, they unloaded the boxes from the back seat and the trunk into the bed of the truck.
"Don't worry, I'm on my way into the office right now," Jasmine said. "I'll get them all inside in case it rains or something."
"Thanks. You work on Sundays?"
Jasmine Devane smiled ruefully. "If only human pain worked 9 to 5.
The door to Lara's office stood partially ajar, letting some needed air flow in as she worked. Her fingers flew over the keys, synthesizing every bit of information she had gleaned so far. She had missed Bass's deadline, and there was no way anything she wrote could be in this morning's paper. But none of that mattered. The deadline was artificial anyway. No publisher could turn down a story this good, no matter what day he happened to get it. Someone pushed the door open a little farther. Hello?
Morning, Laura.
Colin Smythe said brightly and took the one seat in front of her desk.
Making yourself at home, I see.
He leaned back in the chair and tented his fingers.
I like that. That's a great way to put it. This is my home, after all.
Well, you're welcome to the office if you like it that much. We can always switch. Actually, I think you deserve it.
I'm not interested in this closet.
Could have fooled me. You're in here all the damn time.
Just checking up on you. I wanted to see what you've got, and I'm starting to think you've got nothing. Bass gave me the story, but he also gave you a chance to get it back.
Laura's face fell. She had hoped Bass Herman would give her a fair shot at the story by keeping Smythe in the dark. Instead, he had opened her up to sabotage, forced her into the pot with a losing hand. Smythe saw the look on her face.
Oh, I practically had to beat it out of him, he said.
He likes you, Laura, he really does, but he also knows which way the wind blows. Still the mayor's son, is that it? He shrugged.
I didn't ask for it.
No, but nobody makes you play that particular card either, and here you are, using it again. His face flushed at the implication he was anything less than self-made.
Nepotism or not, it's over. It's Sunday morning. The Sunday paper is out, and your name is nowhere on it.
Bass ran your interview, she said almost to herself.
Of course he did. It's gold. This one issue will outsell some months of Gazette circulation.
He didn't give me enough time.
Smythe waved her off. Always excuses with women. Never results. Face it, Laura, you blew it.
Something about watching Jasmine Devane's cool arrogance in the face of aggression must have rubbed off on her. In a moment's clarity, all her fear and anxiety, about what violence this man could do to her, about what damage she might do to herself by engaging with him, melted away. It left a hole in her chest that filled quickly with disgust at his naked self-interest and a growing sense of her own superiority. She was better than him, more talented, more insightful. She was everything Colin Smythe wanted to be, and more. He just didn't know it yet. She walked over and sat on the edge of her desk. He leaned back in the chair and put his feet up, pleased with himself.
Sure, you got the story, she said. But that doesn't make you anything more than the low-rent Machiavelli of a small-time newsroom.
I've seen guys like you at other papers. Just as ambitious. Maybe a little smarter. You're bullies, all of you, determined to climb the ladder by pulling everyone else off it, one by one. Because that's the only way you make it up a rung. He shot up from the chair.
You wouldn't know a good story if it bit you in the ass.
Coming from you, that means nothing. I've read your stories, Colin. I read everything you wrote for the last 6 months, and you know what? It's all just filler, fluff. Sure, maybe I blew my shot. So what? I have something you'll never have. The talent to get shots at stories like this one. And if I keep at it, I'll get another one, and another one. You may have this story, but that's only because you were in the right place at the right time. This is the only shot you'll ever have. The whites of his eyes seemed to have doubled in size. Anger came off of him in waves. So, good luck out there, she said. I think you'll find it's a pretty brutal world if you ever manage to get out of Hillsborough. His voice came out choked.
You're nothing compared to me.
She flipped her hair, impatient now. Just a few days ago, she would have considered this man something like her nemesis. Now she looked across the desk at him, red face, hands trembling, and all she could feel was pity. She felt sorry for him. Oh, come on, she said. This whole thing has nothing to do with the quality of my reporting or the fact that I left this town as soon as I could. It's because I'm a woman, nothing more, nothing less. His expression froze. The corner of his mouth curled up in contempt.
You're not built for this work. You don't have the courage for it. Boston proves that much.
Have you read yourself, Colin? Human interest stories about the biggest pumpkin at the county fair? Op-eds that somehow managed to take a neutral stance and offer no opinion at all. You've never taken a professional risk in your entire life, and you couldn't report your way out of a paper bag. You don't have the balls for this game. He visibly shook with rage. Tendons in his neck stood out like ropes, and he rocked from foot to foot, filled with pressure about to burst.
What did you say to me?
You're a coward, she said simply. He exploded around the desk, jammed his fist deep into her hair, and got a good handful of it. Then he started twisting. She cried out, and he twisted harder, forcing her down to her knees in front of him. The pain was like 1,000 needles injecting her with fire. She feared a chunk of her scalp would tear free. Still, through the pain, she forced herself to look up at him. His eyes bored into hers. His breathing reached a fever pitch.
This is the only thing a bitch like you is good for, he wheezed.
Lara squeezed her eyes shut and heard a rap on the door. Before either of them could say anything, it started to swing open. Smythe let go of her hair and stormed through the door, pushing past whoever had opened it. Lara realized a few tears had escaped their ducts. She wiped them away with the back of her hand and turned to see who had saved her. Natalie, the assistant, stared back at her open-mouthed. As Lara watched, Natalie's mouth snapped shut and her lips pressed into a hard white line. Her eyebrows fell, her nose bent into a snarl. She shot Lara a look of pure, unbridled hatred.
Not enough you had to fuck your way through half of Boston. Now you come and try to steal all the good men here, too?
Lara, still on her knees, repeated her in disbelief.
Good men?
Natalie squared her shoulders and turned up her nose.
Cullen's not like that, though. He's not going to fall for your tricks.
And with that, she turned on her heel and disappeared. Lara found the bathroom empty, locked the door, and allowed herself 5 minutes to calm down. Air heaved in and out of her chest. Her blood churned as if in a blender. During the, she searched for the right word. Incident? Attack? Everything had taken on a surreal sluggishness. Like a movie slowed down to half speed. It hadn't seemed real. Now, alone in the bathroom, she ticked off all the things that had been working against her. The early hour, the nearly empty newsroom, her own secluded office. Worst of all, she had vastly underestimated the depth of Smythe's insecurities. Shame burned inside her. A bit because it had been foolish to bait him so openly, but mostly because, once he had revealed himself capable of the violence she had always suspected, she had done nothing. No, she had done worse than nothing. She had allowed him to make her get down on her knees, had allowed him to force her to genuflect before the idol of his own self-image. And what kind of fight had she put up? What would Jasmine Devane have done? In a flash, she had an image of her friend dishing out a swift kick to the balls, of Smythe crumpling to the floor like a bag of bones. Despite everything, she smiled. Some therapist I found, she thought. Could she go to Bass Herman, go to the police, report Smythe to anyone who would listen? She dismissed the idea as soon as it came. Issues like this were he said, she said, and in this case, it would be more complicated still. Lara didn't doubt for a moment that little Natalie would do anything to protect her crush's reputation. It would be 2 against 1, her word against the town's golden boy. She would not be believed, and then she would be made a pariah. What little reputation she had left, stripped away in back rooms and bars, golf games and sewing circles, as the town gossips did what they did best. No, she wouldn't give them the satisfaction. Carefully. Precisely. She put herself back together, and when she looked halfway normal again, she threw open the bathroom door, collected the papers from her office, shot across the newsroom, and launched herself through Bass Herman's office door. He had folded himself into a leather wingback in the corner and was reading Sunday's Gazette, cigar burning in the ashtray at his side.
Afraid the Sunday paper's already been sent to the printers, he said without looking up. You know, seeing as it's Sunday morning and all.
Lara sat down across from him, reached out, and forced the paper down into his lap. He gave her an annoyed look,
What do you want? We were clear on the deadline.
What I've got here. She tossed the stack of papers into his lap. Trumps any damn deadline. Bass put down his paper and started in on the first page. It totaled only a touch over 1,000 words, and Lara expected him to be done in 5 minutes. Instead, he put the story down after 5 seconds, butted the pages back together, and looked at her over the rims of his reading glasses. He said nothing. Come on, Bass, that story is going to sell a lot of papers.
Do you think that's all I'm in this for, to sell as many papers as possible?
Lara just shook her head.
No, I didn't think so. Someone pointed you toward a 30-year-old story, and now you want to reprint it with some new conclusions, am I right?
Just read the story.
Look at this damn headline. The Return of the Kid. Could you be any more melodramatic?
It's just plain dramatic, Bass. I didn't inflate the facts, and I didn't juice them up with purple prose. It's all there in black and white. The connections speak for themselves. He stood and walked around behind his desk.
Spare me this tabloid tripe. Everyone in this town who was old enough to talk 30 years ago remembers the kid. Hell, you think people haven't been talking about it ever since the Hansen girl showed up in that field? But that's all it is, talk. People bring up the kid every time someone goes missing. It's the local ghost story.
Just read it, Bass. With a sigh, he pushed his reading glasses up his nose and started plowing through the sheets of paper. 5 minutes later, he looked up at her and whistled.
Your boyfriend is going to get in a lot of trouble for this.
Lara shrugged.
He's your source for all this, right?
No comment. Bass shook his head.
Don't know what could have gotten into him. I like Frank Stewart, I do. But when we print this, he's going up in flames.
There's no evidence he told me a single thing, Lara said. And I notice you said when, not if.
Forget about proof. You two are an item, and everyone knows it. 2 + 2 = 4.
Whatever. When can we print it? He scratched his sideburns.
It's good, Lara. The quotes and confirmations from law enforcement make it a lot more than rumor.
He needed a push. Quickly, Lara spelled out the follow-up. The psychology of a killer, courtesy of Dr. Jasmine Devane.
And she's agreed to do it?
Bass asked. We're set to go. I can schedule the interview and then write it up any time. All I need is your go-ahead. He paused, thinking.
I don't know. That whole premise is tangential to the story itself.
Of course it is, she said. But it's a big story. Huge. It needs to be fleshed out. It needs context.
Hmm,
he said. And it will sell papers. Enter the mind of a killer? Find out what makes the kid tick? It's the sort of voyeurism that will capture the public interest. It's a slam dunk and you know it. He nodded slowly.
Okay, it'll be on the front page tomorrow morning.
She walked back to her office half as quickly as she'd left it. Her anger, the hot red coal that had rented space in her chest for the past month, seemed to bleed out onto the floor. All she could feel was the tingle of anticipation running up and down her spine. All she could think about was her name back in print again. Chapter 14. When she pushed the kitchen door open, the phone was already ringing. She shoved the two overstuffed brown paper bags onto the counter and flinched as a gallon of milk ripped through the bottom and hurtled toward the floor. Her mother had been right about the town gossip, and it left her with the need to bury the hatchet. Restocking the kitchen was an act of service, however small, and she hoped it would assuage her guilt. The gallon of milk hit the linoleum and bounced. It didn't break. She sighed, one less thing to fight over. She picked up the phone and said hello, an edge of irritation creeping into her voice.
It's me.
I told you never to call me here, Frank. What if my mother answered?
So what if she did?
I've told you a million times she would never approve.
I get it. She doesn't like me.
It's nothing to do with you. She wouldn't approve of any man calling here, asking after me. In her mind, I'm still 15 years old. In her mind, I'm a little slut.
If she already thinks you're a slut, what does it matter? You already hate the old bitch.
Laura said nothing. Frank Stewart did that sometimes, said things calculated to cut. It was one of his least attractive features. He was quick to say them, and just as quick to take them back. She usually deployed a tactical silence, let whatever venom he had spit hang between them until it couldn't be ignored. It forced a moment of self-reflection, and usually it induced an apology. Just not this time.
I need to see you, he said.
If you think acting like an asshole is the way to my heart, you've got,
can we skip the banter and the judgments just for today? I need to see you.
Why the rush?
Not on the phone. I'm coming over there.
Wait. Whatever rules we have about calling this house, they go double for actually showing up. Do not come over here.
I need to see you, Laura. I'm coming over. You can leave if you want. Then it'll just be me and dear old Mom.
Laura felt panic rise in her chest. The thought of Frank and her mother in the same room, discussing her, was among her worst nightmares. Neither person would ever look at her the same.
What if I came to you? She said.
You've been dodging my calls since that fight Saturday morning. I know you don't want to see me.
She took a deep breath. Listen, Frank, I haven't been dodging anything. I just haven't been home. She could practically hear his hackles go up, even through the phone line.
Kick me while I'm down, why don't you?
Look, that came out wrong. I wasn't with anyone else. It was just to get away from her. Tell me where you are, and I'll come to you. He paused.
Fine, I'll be at home for the next hour. If I don't see you before then, I'm getting in my car and heading out to the Chambers farm.
Laura cringed at the thought. No need for that, I'll be there, she said and hung up. Diane Chambers lumbered around the corner from the hall and lowered herself into the oversized kitchen chair. Laura didn't bother looking at her.
How long have you been listening in?
Listening in? Me? I was in the hall and just happened to overhear you talking with that man. Everyone says you're fucking.
Laura squeezed her eyes shut. Can you even hear yourself? Is this how a mother talks to her daughter?
When the daughter's in need of a good smack upside the head for being a little whore, that's exactly how a mother talks. What kind of mother would I be if I let this kind of behavior go unchecked?
So it's for my own good? Bullshit. Her mother put a hand to her chest, offended at the implication her motives could be anything less than righteous.
Of course. I do it out of love, my dear. Out of pure, unadulterated love.
Laura felt like she wanted to throw up.
The big city tainted you, Diane said.
She looked away again, refusing to look her mother in the eye.
But I can help you wash off the stench, help you find a good man, start a nice family. I have experience in all that, you know.
Frank is a good man. I don't
doubt he is, my dear, but you'll never win him over like that. Men require a soft touch. They like a woman who agrees with them, who doesn't rock the boat or get fresh. They want obedience.
Laura leaned over the sink and looked out the window, agog at her mother's bizarre change of gears. First you call me a whore for seeing a man, then you want to give me advice on how to hang on to him? Don't you see a contradiction there? Her mother's brow crinkled in genuine confusion.
You're already screwing him, aren't you? Marrying him is just about the only way to turn it respectable. You better dig your claws deep into this one, Laura. The way people talk about you, no other man is going to want you. No one will touch you with a 10-foot pole.
How could she be sweating and yet feel so cold? An intense freeze grew out of her stomach, spreading up across her chest and down through her legs. Her knees wobbled. The walls seemed a foot closer than they had before. I have to get out of here, she said to herself.
What? Speak up.
I have to go, she said, and snatched the car keys off the counter on her way out the door. Frank jerked the door of his apartment open as though he'd been expecting someone to break it down. His uniform was half missing. He still had on the pants and the gun belt, but behind him was his uniform shirt strewn across the floor, badge and all. She could see one shoe sitting on the coffee table.
It's you,
he said, and backed away into the apartment. Sure is, she said. His eyes seemed vacant. Remember you ordered me to come see you?
Or else?
She deepened her voice for the last two words, trying for comedic effect.
Right,
he said, and slid down onto the couch. Frank, are you okay? He looked up, his eyes snapping into focus for the first time, the pupils tearing into her.
I'm a pretty fucking far distance from okay.
Yeah, you look terrible. He shook his head.
I'm gonna look a lot worse unless you do something.
She sat on the couch next to him. Tell me what's going on. I'll help you if I can.
Don't pretend like you don't know.
She threw up her hands. Obviously, you think I know what's going on here. Look at me. I don't have the slightest fucking idea. She mirrored his language back at him. So just forget about the dramatics and tell me. He took her face in his hands. She tried to pull back, but he squeezed his hands together tight.
You didn't write an article for the Gazette? The Return of the Kid?
Shit. Somehow he had seen it already. The only explanation was that Bass Herman had reached out to Sheriff McKinney for comment, which in turn had started this ball of shit rolling downhill. She hadn't intended for him to find out this way. Let go of me, she said. He didn't move, then looked down at his hands as though seeing them for the first time. He jerked them back down into his lap.
Sorry,
he said, his voice shaking. I did write an article for the Gazette. That's my job.
Well, it's got stuff we talked about in it, Laura. Stuff about the investigation.
Did they let you read it? He nodded. So you know there are plenty of things in that story we didn't talk about. Things you never breathed a word of. You're not the source, Frank. His eyes squished shut so hard it looked like he might hurt himself.
But they think I'm the source, Laura. They think it's me.
So tell them you're not. He laughed a sharp bark.
Everyone knows we're sleeping together. Exactly how much do you think my denial is worth?
You're an honest guy. Everyone trusts you.
You're damn right. But in my line of work, you learn that people tell lies. That 9 times out of 10, a situation is exactly what it looks like. And this looks bad, Laura.
She shrugged. I don't know what to tell you. McKinney knows you. Your fellow deputies know you. After all those years, if they turn on you, I don't know. It's an injustice. But that's between you and them. It's got nothing to do with me. He shot to his feet.
It's got everything to do with you,
he roared, and for a second she thought he would hit her. Instead, he just loomed over her, breathing hard, his chest rising and falling, hands balled into fists. I'm sorry, she said quietly, but it doesn't.
You wrote the story, and it's going to end my career. You don't see any cause and effect there?
I was just doing my job. I wouldn't go back and change it, even if I could.
Come with me.
He held out a hand. You're not even dressed. He started pulling on his shoes.
Come with me,
he repeated.
Where? To the station. Tell McKinney I'm not the source. You can still clear all this up.
No. He stopped moving, fingers on the laces.
Why won't you help me?
I will not answer any questions about a source. That means I will never confirm a source, and I'll never deny one either.
If you care even a little for me, help me.
She shook her head. The house phone rang. Frank snatched it up, muttered into the receiver, then tossed it to her.
It's for you,
he said. Laura wrinkled her nose in confusion.
Go ahead, take it, he snarled. I'm sure it's real important. In fact, just lock the door on your way out.
He darted into the hall and slammed the door behind him. Laura lifted the receiver to her ear. Hello?
I've been following you,
the caller said. It was a man's voice, a rich baritone. There was a hint of an accent, but Laura couldn't place it. It had a lilt, a slight extension of the vowel sounds that made it sound almost Caribbean.
Excuse me?
I know it's you, Lara. I'd recognize your voice anywhere.
He paused, and she listened to the thick, measured breathing on the other end of the line.
I only wish we could speak in person.
How are we speaking at all? How
did I know to find you there at Deputy Stewart's home?
He cut her off, chuckling.
As I said, I'd been following you. I was referring to your career the first time I said it. I do believe I've read everything you've ever written, but it's just as true if you want to be literal-minded.
Lara said nothing.
I've been tracing your progress, what little of it you've made, trailing behind you as you skitter from place to place.
This is one of those get-out-of-town-while-you-still-can calls, isn't it?
Not at all.
The voice sounded almost offended.
I'd hate to see you leave. We haven't yet had the chance to meet.
You're right. Maybe we should get introductions out of the way. You know my name, but I didn't catch yours.
The caller said nothing.
She could hear that he was still there, breathing into the receiver. The sound of his breath traveled down the line and funneled into her ear, transformed by the trip. It had a slight electronic tinge, a robot bellows hissing at her. Your name? She said again.
You know my name.
That's not how phone calls work. People usually introduce themselves.
Of course, and I'm not usually so rude. But our present circumstances demand certain precautions. I want to meet you, Lara. Really, I do. But not until the time is right.
Okay, she said, dropping onto the couch, phone in her lap. You don't want to meet me. You don't want to tell me your name. Tell me this. Why shouldn't I just hang up?
You could do that. You could end the call. But it won't break the connection.
What does that mean? Another pause, more heavy breathing. Then he said,
That's a lovely blouse you're wearing. So white and sheer. When you stand by the window, I can almost see the sunlight peeking through.
Lara shot up from the couch as though hit with an electric shock, jogged to the window, looked down at the street. No one there. A passing car never paused. The building opposite featured an array of windows. Most of them were covered by blinds. The uncovered ones opened into a vast interior darkness. She scanned them one by one, searching for signs of movement. Nothing. She lifted the phone back to her ear.
You can see me? I'm watching you, he said, and there was a kind of glee in his voice, a childlike excitement. I'm watching you right now.
Lara frowned. No need to be so creepy.
You think I'm playing a game?
What else would you call it?
He paused, thoughtful. More like a work of art.
Excuse me?
This is truly wonderful. I never get to share the sight of things with anyone.
He stretched the last word into two.
I'm so glad I chose you.
Chose me?
You're quite right. We chose each other, didn't we?
The street below was nothing but stillness. Even the cars had stopped driving past.
Look, I don't have time to talk to nut jobs, whether they're following me or not. I'm hanging up. No, he said. You're not.
And why is that?
Because you know who I am.
She cradled the receiver between her head and shoulder, rubbing her hands together trying to get the circulation moving. Her fingertips had suddenly gone numb.
I don't. We almost met, you and I.
Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. He chuckled again.
And a sense of humor, too. What a catch. I thought you looked beautiful in the starlight. That flashlight ruined your night vision, and you nearly ran into me. You looked me right in the eye, nose to nose, feet away. I thought it was all over right then and there. I thought I'd have to squeeze the life out of you. But you had this superbly blank look on your face, and instantly, and with perfect clarity, I understood that I was invisible.
He giggled.
After that, the hardest part was trying not to laugh.
What are you talking about? She asked.
Friday night, up on the ridge, he said simply. You found my little hiding spot.
Time seemed to stand still. Everything dropped away. Through it all, she could hear just two things. The increasing rhythm of her heart, and the colors perfectly even breathing.
Cat got your tongue?
She said nothing.
I could have gotten your tongue, you know. Could have pried it out of your mouth like a hook from a fish's cheek.
Why didn't you? Laura said, finding her voice again.
Because that would have been the end of us. Instead of the beginning.
Us, she repeated.
Did you get my message?
Yes, I get the message. You can hurt me if you want.
Oh, that's a given. Small town, open fields. Where can you run? But I meant my actual message. Is it arrived yet?
She shook her head.
Ah,
he said. He really can see me, she thought.
Well, my courier must be running a little slow today. No matter. I'm sure he'll be along shortly.
I'm sure, she said, and the words seemed to come from somewhere outside her. His voice suddenly repulsed her. It was a very pleasant voice on its own, but she knew it was manufactured by a tongue. A tongue lodged in a head. A head connected to a body that in turn led to arms. Arms that ended in hands. The same hands that had throttled the life out of a 10-year-old girl. The line between those hands and her own ear burned brightly in her mind. Her stomach knotted. Bile clawed its way into her throat.
The more of your work I read, Laura, the more I like you. Do you know why I like it so much?
She shook her head again. That seemed enough for him.
It's the strain of empathy that runs through all your writing. Even when you cover the worst humanity has to offer, you reach out from a place of understanding. At the end of your articles, I always feel better about myself.
You'd know about the worst. She spit the words like acid.
I'm not what you think I am, Laura. The glee was back in his voice. So many surprises. I can't wait to see your face.
Why wait? She said. The words out before she could stop herself.
And brave, he said, almost to himself. Just this morning, I was rereading a story you did for the Globe a few years ago. That terrible business about the warehouse, with the boys who were taken.
Catching up on some of your colleagues?
I would never abuse a child, Laura.
He said it with absolute moral indignation, the irony lost on him completely.
Even in that museum of horrors, you didn't portray them as monsters. As men with dirty souls, to be sure, but men just the same. I wonder, do you see me that way?
I haven't seen you at all.
You will,
he whispered. If you think... The dial tone cut her off. He was gone. She scanned the street one more time, then replaced the receiver and left the apartment, locking the door on her way out. Chapter 15. Someone was watching her. Down at street level, eyes were all she could feel. Around every corner, behind every curtain, she could feel them watching her as she hurried to the dart.
Laura!
She jumped a foot in the air, whirled around, keys splayed out between her fingers, ready to maim the first person who touched her.
Laura, you okay?
The voice was coming from a black Tahoe, stopped in the middle of King Street. Tominski stared at her from the driver's seat, his thick eyebrows raised an inch up his forehead.
Laura?
She let herself breathe again. Yes, I'm fine. You just surprised me.
Got a few minutes?
Do I have a choice? He gave her the confused look again.
Sure you do. Feel free to take off. Just know you'll be missing out on something.
She shook herself, trying to get rid of the slimy, unclean feeling the phone call had rubbed off on her, and climbed into the passenger seat. Tominski kept his gaze trained on her the whole time.
You sure you're okay?
He asked once she was settled. Most of her brain screamed out to tell him exactly what had just happened. Even without real proof, her gut told her the call had been anything but a prank. The mysterious caller had been him, The kid. The man they were all hunting. And Tominski was the most experienced hunter in 100 miles. And he'll get him, a voice whispered from somewhere deep down inside. He'll get him, Laura repeated to herself. She had no illusions. This partnership between them was a means to an end. Tominski wanted to catch the kid. Once he did that, the flow of information would stop, and she would lose her most valuable source. I'm good, she said finally. Just a little preoccupied.
Well, buckle up.
My car, she pointed to it.
Nice ride, he said. Don't worry, I'll bring you back when we're done.
She hadn't thought it possible, but the interior of his motel room was even uglier. At least the outside of Elias Quant's place could be dismissed as utilitarian. Inside, it seemed to have been decorated by an insane person. The bed was round, occupying the very center of the room. The curtains were made of orange-crushed velvet. The shag carpet looked ready to shed at any moment. Pastel colors and different wallpaper patterns battled against each other, her eyes the only casualty.
It looks like the 70s threw up in here. He grinned. Oh, it gets better. The toilet stinks like old septic, and the air conditioning is broken.
You've got to be kidding me. He shook his head. So let's go back to the diner. I know you federal guys don't get much of a per diem. She took a step into the room, trying not to touch anything.
But considering the circumstances, I'm buying.
Afraid we need the privacy. Here, pull up a chair.
The small breakfast table and two wooden chairs looked clean enough. She lowered herself gingerly into the nearest seat. Tominski sat across from her, producing a file folder and a yellow legal pad from the inside pocket of his briefcase. How'd you find me there on the street?
Wasn't too hard. Heard your boyfriend got the talking to of his life this morning.
He's not my boyfriend. I've only been here a couple of months.
Hell, I heard McKinney took him into his office and practically skinned him alive.
And you think I'm the reason?
Oh, I'd bet you are. Didn't take a genius to figure out you'd be the first person he'd call.
Laura said nothing.
I bet he begged you to tell them it wasn't him. Did you do it?
She shook her head.
Nah, I didn't think you would. Still, you're not totally unfeeling. At least not in my experience. Figured I would find you there at his apartment, making your mea culpas. Did you make up?
She shook her head again.
You sorry about that?
Not sure yet.
Damn, that's cold.
She looked up from the tabletop. You call me here to give me relationship advice?
Nothing so simple, I'm afraid.
He pushed the file folder in front of him, then folded his hands on top of it.
I brought you here because I'm going to need your help on this. All hell is about to break loose.
Sounds juicy. He winced.
Don't be flippant. You're more right than you know. This morning, the Orange County Sheriff's Office received a package.
Did you get my message? The mystery man's words pinged off the inside of her skull. What kind of package?
FedEx, he said.
Inside? He coughed into his hand.
A human ear, the left ear, along with another section of skin presumed to be from the same person. We believe they belong to Teresa Mitchum.
Laura thought of that knife leading inexorably to the hands that had wielded the knife. She started to gag.
It's okay. Let it out if you need to,
Tominski said, and reached over to pat her on the back. She could tell he hadn't expected her to be so queasy. She sucked at the hot air and said,
Maybe it's not her. Maybe not.
You don't sound convinced.
Well, there's an earring in the ear. Angie Mitchum pierced her girl's ears not a week before she disappeared. Did it with an ice cube and a sterilized sewing needle. Then gave her a pair of her own earrings to wear.
Laura gagged again. She had gotten her ears pierced the same way. It had been a friend holding the needle, and they were under the bleachers after school. She would have been a few years older than Teresa. She pictured the little girl bracing for the pain, fighting through it, smiling with tears in her eyes as she looked in the mirror for the first time. The image smiling back at her suddenly so much older looking. A grown-up at last. It was a rite of passage around these parts, one she and Teresa shared. That connection, sudden and unexpected, made the girl so much more real. Laura felt she could reach out and touch her. Take a breath, Tominski said. What's in the file? She managed.
Nothing you need to see.
You brought it out for me, didn't you? So let's play show and tell.
It's pictures,
he said, and let the implication hang between them. Show them to me.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Show them to me. She made herself sit up straight and steeled her face into a mask. He nodded, then slid out the packet of glossy 5x7s. The first depicted the ear, now laid out on a spotless white countertop, a small ruler next to it for scale. It was small. Even absent context, it was clearly the ear of a child. Dangling from the lobe was a small bead of blue glass. It came like this?
It was in a smaller box within the box, lined with cotton to soak up the excess blood. We think he didn't want it to leak in transit. Didn't want to ruin the effect.
Still performing for the crowd, she said, almost to herself.
Exactly. That is exactly what he's doing. Why else make contact?
And? He slid the next two photographs out without a word. She understood his silence. Nothing could have prepared her for the images. The first appeared to be a rectangular section of skin. Based on the ruler in the shot, it was about 2 inches by 3. It was covered in a mass of black scribbles, like ink spilled from a pen. The second photo was the same section of skin. This time, 4 hands clad in rubber gloves were each holding an edge, pulling and expanding the skin into a rectangle almost twice its original size, and stretching the black ink in the process. It wasn't random scribbling. It was numbers. She put a hand to her mouth. My God.
You weren't the first one to say that.
Row after row of tiny black numbers, etched meticulously into the skin. She reached out and ran her fingertips across them. 8, 27, 4, 4, 3, 5, 4, 9, 4, 4, 8, 2, 3, 6, 3, 7, 11, 17, 3, 6, 3, 3, 8, 27, 3, 6, 3, 7, 8, 27, 8, 27, 11, 51, 11, 37. What are they? She asked, her voice a whisper. Tominski sighed.
If you're asking what they mean, I have no idea. As for what they are, it's a tattoo.
As in, a heart with mom's name across it?
Pretty much. Simpler. One type of needle, one color of ink. One very steady hand. They're small, as you can see.
He tattooed her. It didn't make any sense.
Yes.
The necessary stretching of the skin and the comment Tim had made about the cotton in the box, purposed to soak up blood, both came into sharp relief. Her head snapped up to look at him, her eyes wide. She's alive, isn't she? Slowly, he nodded.
As of 6 or 8 hours ago, yes. The blood had barely congealed when the package reached us. And this, he tapped the tattoo photo, is recent as well. Teresa was alive when he tattooed her, and she was still breathing when he harvested his work.
His voice sounded flat, like he was ordering off a menu at a restaurant. He cut it off her.
It's why it had to be stretched so that we could read it.
Jesus, listen to yourself. Doesn't it even bother you? He reached out, tried to put a hand on top of hers, but she recoiled away from him.
Of course it does, but I have to put all that aside. At least for now. At least until we catch him.
Why are you telling me all this?
Because in helping you, I'm also earning your silence.
He reached out and took her hand again. She tried to jerk away, but he snagged her by the wrist, then squeezed hard and pulled her close.
You're hurting me. Look at my face, Laura. I don't care if I'm hurting you.
He let go of her arm.
I showed you all this, so you understand exactly what we're dealing with. This sick fuck is keeping that little girl alive and flaying her bit by bit. I showed you all this, so you can remember it. The first time you even consider deviating from the plan. The first time you so much as muse about doing something other than exactly what I tell you,
Think of these photos, and of Teresa Mitchum, and hopefully it will convince you to do the goddamned right thing.
Maybe we'll disagree on the right thing to do.
This isn't a democracy. You don't get a vote. I need you to write an article for me, so you will. You've been talking to the local psychologist, right?
How do you know about that?